You are listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
All right, good morning, everyone. We're back on the record on KCR 22211623. We are continuing with voir dire of juror groups this morning. Is the state ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Is the defense ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Counsel, out of this group, I'll note we are advised there are two fell to appears, jurors 262 and 233. We'll advise if they do show up, but shortly here we'll have these jurors brought in and do a roll call to confirm. All right, parties are ready. I'll ask if the bailiff instructs the jurors to be brought into the courtroom.
All right, please. Counsel present, Your Honor.
Thank you. Please be seated. All right, good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the jury. We are on the record on KCR 22211623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell. I'll note that the defendant is present with counsel. The state's present as well, the prosecution. Before we move on with this group of jurors, the first thing I would ask the jurors to do, just so we can confirm with our seating chart, is if each of you would hold up the red card you have and give us a moment to confirm who's here and who's not. All right, thank you. Having reviewed where the jurors are seated now, I'll ask if there's a issue or objection to the manner in which the jury panel has been recalled and seated today. Any objection from the state?
No objection, Your Honor. Thank you.
From the defense?
No objection, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, counsel. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for returning this morning. You've been recalled as prospective jurors in the case now before us. I'll reintroduce my court staff again. My name is Stephen W. Boyce, and I'm the district judge of Fremont County, Idaho. I'm in charge of this courtroom and trial. The clerk assisting today is Shannon Holstein, who's seated to my right, and she keeps minutes of these proceedings and will be administering oaths to you as jurors. The courtroom deputies are here assisting in maintaining the courtroom order and helping the jurors move about where they're supposed to be this morning. Our court reporter is Mary Fox, seated to my left, and she takes a stenographic record of everything that's being said here today. And then my staff attorney is Courtney Stallings, and she assists me with legal research and administrative issues that come up throughout the day. Each of you has been qualified to serve as a juror of this court, and each of you has filled out a questionnaire that's now been reviewed by the court and the attorneys, and it was determined to recall you for further questioning. The first thing we do in a trial is to select 18 jurors, consisting of 12 jurors and 6 alternates from among you. I'm going to ask the clerk to now have a roll call of the jury using your red card numbers. So if you would please audibly state you are present or here when your number is called, that will help us keep the record of who has appeared. Madam Clerk, would you please conduct the roll call now?
Juror 1635, juror 1645, juror 1658, juror 1680, juror 1736, juror 1760, juror 1779, juror number 69, juror number 84, juror number 126, juror number 148, juror number 208, juror number 229, juror number 379?
Here. All right, the court will note 2 jurors, 233 and 262, have failed to appear. I'll have the jury commissioner's office instruct them that they're required to report today by 5 o'clock and issue an explanation for their failure to show up. If they do not show up or don't provide good cause for failing to appear, they may be subject to a fine up to $500 or imprisonment up to 5 days in county jail pursuant to Idaho Code 7610 and Idaho Code 2208. So for those of you who have appeared this morning, thank you. To assist you in understanding and participating in the jury selection process, I'll reintroduce you at this time to the parties and their lawyers and summarize what this case is about. When I introduce an individual, please stand and briefly face the jury panel, then retake your seat. This case has been brought by the state of Idaho. I'll sometimes refer to the state as the prosecution. The state is represented at this trial by Lindsay Blake, Fremont County, Idaho prosecutor, Rob Wood, the Madison County, Idaho prosecutor, Ingrid Beatty, a specially appointed prosecutor, and Rocky Wixon, deputy prosecutor, Fremont County. The defendant in this case, Chad Guy Daybell, is represented by his attorney, John Pryor.
Good morning, Liz.
This is a criminal case, meaning the defendant is charged by the state of Idaho with a violation of the law. I previously read to you a summary of the charges in the amended indictment when you were here last week to complete your questionnaires. With regard to the defendant, the state of Idaho has alleged that Chad Guy Daybell committed the following crimes. Count one, conspiracy to commit first-degree murder and grand theft by deception. Count two, first-degree murder. Count three, conspiracy to commit first-degree murder and grand theft by deception. Count four, first-degree murder. Count five, conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. Count six, first-degree murder. Count seven, insurance fraud. Count nine, insurance fraud. Mr. Daybell has pled not guilty to the charges. Please remember this is simply a description of the charges. It is not evidence. Under our law and system of justice, every defendant is presumed to be innocent. This means two things. First, the state has the burden of proving the defendant guilty. The state has that burden throughout the trial. The defendant is never required to prove his innocence, nor does the defendant ever have to produce any evidence at all. Second, the state must prove the alleged crime beyond a reasonable doubt. A reasonable doubt is not a mere possible or imaginary doubt. It is a doubt based on reason and common sense. It may arise from a careful and impartial consideration of all the evidence or from a lack of evidence. If after considering all of the evidence, you have a reasonable doubt about the defendant's guilt, you must find the defendant not guilty. The duty of the jury is to determine the facts and then apply the law set forth in the instructions I will later give you to those facts. In this way, you will decide the case. In applying the court's instructions as to the controlling law, you must follow those instructions regardless of your opinion of what the law is or what the law should be or what any lawyer may state the law to be. During the course of this trial, including the jury selection process, you are instructed that you are not to discuss this case among yourselves or with anyone else, including use of email, text messaging, social media, or any other form of communication, electronic or otherwise. Do not conduct any personal investigation or look up any information from any source about the case, including the internet. Do not form an opinion as to the merits of the case until after the case has been submitted to you for your determination. At this time, then, the court is going to request the clerk place this entire jury panel under oath for the voir dire examination. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, if you would please stand and raise your right hands now.
Do you and each of you solemnly swear or affirm that you will truthfully answer such questions as may be asked of you by court or counsel, touching upon your qualifications to sit as a trial juror in the cause now on trial, so help you God?
I do.
Thank you.
All right, the court observed that all the jurors took the oath and are under oath for this examination. Will the attorney stipulate the jurors have been properly called and impaneled, starting with the state?
Yes, Your Honor, thank you.
Yes, Your Honor, thank you.
Thank you, counsel. In this part of the jury selection, you're going to be asked questions touching on your qualifications to serve as jurors in this particular case. This part of the case is known as the voir dire examination. Voir dire is an ancient Anglo-Norman term dating back hundreds of years to the origins of the common law, and in Old French it simply means to speak the truth. Voir dire examination is for the purpose of determining if your decision in this case would in any way be influenced by opinions which you now hold or by some personal experience or special knowledge which you may have concerning the subject matter to be tried. The object is to obtain 12 persons who will impartially try the issues of this case upon the evidence presented in this courtroom without being influenced by any other factors. Please understand this questioning is not for the purpose of prying into your personal affairs, but only for the purpose of obtaining an impartial jury. Whenever you're called upon to answer a question, you can raise your hand or reference your red card number. We are making a record of the proceedings, so please make verbal answers to the questions in lieu of, for example, shaking your head or nodding. And also, please try to avoid speaking at the same time as anyone questioning you, so the record remains clear. In addition, the court is live stream broadcasting these proceedings for public access, and also the courtroom's open to the public. You are not being filmed or videoed, however, your verbal responses are being recorded and heard by the public. If you have any answer to a question or area of discussion that you believe would be uncomfortable to discuss publicly or embarrassing for you, please notify us that, and we can discuss those issues in a more private setting outside of the public view. Similarly, if your answer to any question may prejudice any other prospective jurors against any of the parties, please refrain from stating that until the other jurors are not in your presence. Also, many of you have knowledge of this case from pretrial media coverage and publicity. Please do not discuss any specific facts or details of the case in front of other jurors in the pool. We'll discuss that with you individually at a later time this morning. I will now read to you a special instruction in this case as follows. The defendant, Chad Guy Daybell, has been charged in the amended indictment with certain counts of entering into a conspiracy with Lori Vallo Daybell and or Alex Cox. The crime of conspiracy involves an agreement by two or more persons to commit a crime. You must only consider the evidence against the defendant in this case and should not speculate as to any other case or legal proceedings involving the alleged co-conspirators. You must remember that the defendant has the presumption of innocence, and you must consider his guilt or innocence solely on the evidence provided in this case. That concludes the special instruction. At this time, I'll instruct the attorneys to avoid repeating questions already asked. You may, however, direct follow-up questions to a juror regarding that juror's response to previous questions. The jury should be aware that during and following the voir dire examination, one or more of you may be challenged. Each side has challenges for cause, meaning they would ask that you be excused for some specific reason. In addition, each side has a number of peremptory challenges, which means they can challenge a juror without providing any reason at all for their dismissal. If you are excused by either side, please do not feel offended or feel that your honesty or integrity has been questioned. It has not. Further, if you are excused as a juror this morning, you may be approached to talk about this case, and you can do that once you're no longer a prospective juror. However, please bear in mind that you should respect the opinions or thoughts of your fellow jurors in discussing this with anyone, and we are in the process of trying to obtain an impartial jury. You are not required to talk to anyone, and if anyone persists in questioning you about the case, and you don't want to talk to them, then please report that to the court. At this time, then, I'm going to begin the court's voir dire, after which the attorneys will be given their opportunity for their own inquiries. If you're being asked a question or someone else is, please listen to the question and responses. You may be called upon to answer the same question later. The first question I will give to the entire jury panel is, to clarify, not the questionnaire you filled out that was lengthy last week. This is just in regards to your juror information form, which has information such as the fact that you reside in Ada County and other personal information. On those juror information forms, then, is there anyone here that thinks their information form is requiring an update or is not still true and accurate? If that's the case, raise your card, and nobody answered to that. The next issue the court will discuss is regarding the time commitment for this case. This is scheduled to be a long trial, approximately 8 to 10 weeks. Would jury service of that time frame create a serious hardship upon you or your family or your business or profession or occupation so as to prevent you from rendering service as a fair and impartial juror in this case? If you believe you'll suffer a hardship for serving that long, please raise your red card. All right, please keep those held up for a moment. All right, I'll take these up individually then, starting with the end there, juror number 69. If you'll give me a moment, I'll locate your question then.
Sure.
All right, you did express a concern about employment obligations in your questionnaire. Do you want to provide any further explanation about that?
Yeah, I'm a part of a software development team, and we work on a lot of different projects across our organization, and my absence would potentially cause them a hardship, and I worry under the subtext of it, if a guy can't get out of jury duty or something for a quarter that I don't feel like I'll be punished while I'm on the jury, but I just worry about maybe retribution in the future. And I don't know. I would say I'm squarely on the fence if it's a good idea for me. And being the only income earner in my home, if it's a risk worth taking. And I'm just not sure. So you said, is there possibly a concern? And I'm on the fence.
All right. Without naming specifically where you work, because I want to preserve your privacy here, I will note that, as I understand it, is a fairly massive corporation with a lot of employees. Is that fair?
That's fair.
How many employees total at your company, if you know?
I can't speak to it. Thousands. Tens of thousands. On my team specifically, you know, there's less than a dozen that can do what I do and have intimate knowledge of the company's processes. There's really very few of us that do it.
Have you discussed with your employer the potential that you may be required to serve in this case in the length of time?
I get a sentiment, fingers crossed, and I assume they hope I get out of it.
Any questions following up on Bourdire from the state?
Just a few, Your Honor. Juror 6-9, do you feel like not knowing, would that be in the back of your mind if you were to sit on this jury?
Do I feel like not knowing would...
Would that be weighing on your mind if you sat on this jury, what the potential ramifications could be to your employment?
It is in the back of my mind, yeah. Again, they are a corporation. I think they've probably dealt with jurors before. They probably know that they can't sack me because I'm selected for a civic duty. But in the back of my mind, yeah, I'm squarely on the fence. I don't know. I trust the people that I work with. I chose to work with them because they have a good community vibe, I guess I'll say. They would potentially pick up a civic duty, you know, if they knew that I had a hardship. If someone's sick, everyone stands up. So on an individual level, I think that they're good. I don't know if I'll be punished in corporate America at the end of the day.
So, and I guess my question would be, do you feel like that would be distracting to you if you were to sit on this jury? Do you feel like it would be distracting you from being able to give the case your full attention? Does that make sense?
I do. Unless if they, can I tell them what's going on? Because they may say, pick a vote with my team. They say, you know what? We got this, Dan. Should over 69, go for it. But without that, I can't say.
Judge, I think given that information, I guess the state's concern would be, it sounds like this is something that will weigh on this juror's mind. While it's an unknown hardship, going off the information that we have today, the state would make a motion to allow this juror to be removed for hardship.
All right, let me ask one follow-up question and then I'll hear from the defense. But have you inquired at all as to whether or not you continue to receive income during the time of jury service?
I did review our policy. I do get the majority of the time is written in policy. I have not inquired beyond that. Again, we have a family dynamic in there. They probably work with it.
All right. Any questions from the defense?
So there's no assurance that you're going to get paid for the entire 8 to 10 weeks of this trial. Is that fair?
I don't have that assurance.
Okay. And you indicated one of the first things you said is that you're the sole provider for your family.
That's correct.
And if there's no assurance as to whether or not you're going to get paid, potentially, this is going to be a financial hardship.
Correct.
And in addition, personal knowledge of processes involving your occupation, I'm not going to talk about your specific occupation, but I'm familiar with it. And cases are personal to the person who works on those projects. Would that be fair?
Yes, we have some cross-trading, but I lead other projects, yeah.
And the reality is your corporation going to be willing to wait for 2 or 3 months on some of these projects that are personal to you while we decide this case. Do you know the answer to that?
The real fear, I guess, and it's probably understandable, is that they figure it out without me. And then
they don't need you.
And then they don't need me after the case. Is generally where it comes from.
I'm going to also join in the state's motion today. We're going to exclude this juror number 69 for cause.
All right. Well, juror number 69, I've really been on the fence on this. I'm listening to your responses. The issue here is I think you have expressed a concern that if you're serving, this is going to become a distraction for you, being concerned about your employment. And for that reason, I am going to allow and grant the state's motion to strike on purposes of hardship. I will say that I find it somewhat disappointing that a corporation this size would not provide a feasible way for its employees to serve in their civic capacity as jurors. And I'm sure your company is involved in litigation all the time and has trials and expects other people to come in and submit their time to help them in a case. And again, I can't imagine that a corporation that big doesn't have a way to accommodate jury service, but I believe you that you feel very concerned about being able to do that. So with all that in mind, you are excused with the thanks of the court for coming in and filling out a questionnaire.
Thank you.
All right, the next juror I'd like to address is juror 148.
Yes, sir.
I'll note in your questionnaire, you didn't provide any concern of hardship. Can you explain to the court how this may impact you if you were required to serve?
As of now, I just started a new job. I've only been there about 12 days. So I did take a $10 cut out in February.
And when you say $10, you mean $10 an hour?
Yes.
Okay. Is this a full-time job?
Yes.
Is it your sole source of income?
Yes.
Have you discussed with your employer the fact that you could be required to be involved in a long jury service?
I did, and they really have not told me any information about it. They said, really starting the job.
So they haven't provided you an assurance you would receive income during the time that you were required to serve here?
No.
Okay. Any questions on voir dire from the state?
No, Your Honor. I think given that additional information, the state would make a motion to have this juror removed for cause based on hardship.
Response from the defense?
Judge, I would also join in a motion to have this hardship. It's probably sole. The income is necessary to survive is what I anticipate. So I'll also.
All right. The court concurs here, given your employment situation and then without you being able to know how that would impact you in a brand new job, I do agree that would potentially constitute a financial hardship for you given the length of this trial. So thank you for completing your questionnaire and returning today for further questioning. You can be excused and please drop your questionnaire off with the bailiff as you leave.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Juror number 208, we'll talk to you next.
Sir.
All right, you did express concerns in your questionnaire regarding your employment, and you could explain, please, what you know about your job situation and how that may be impacted if you are required to serve.
So while I would have security of continued salary during this time and my employer is able to work with me, I am a teacher, so that would put me out through the remainder of the school year during testing season, which is extremely important to my role and my students. I also have additional jobs outside of this, so I don't know what they would require of me for my evening work.
All right, and you're the sole income provider for your family, is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, would the state like to inquire on board our?
So you indicated that you would continue to get your salary.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
But it sounds like you have concerns about leaving your classroom.
Yes.
Do you feel like that would be in the back of your head and a distraction from giving this case your full attention?
I think the burden of preparing for somebody else to be covering my position would be, like, it would be a lot.
A lot to juggle in addition to this? Yes, because it would require me to go in on the weekends and prep things for somebody else to cover my role.
Your Honor, given the statements provided by this juror 208, the state would make a motion to allow this juror to be removed for hardship.
Response from the defense.
Judge, may I have one here?
Yes.
You mentioned that in addition to being a teacher, and it's no secret that in my opinion, we don't support our teachers financially as much as we should. And I know a couple of teachers from the same place you work. And they also work a second and third job to make their bills and meet their financial obligations. And that's what I'm hearing from you as well.
Yes, that is correct.
And having to do that, there's no assurance that you're going to get that extra money to meet your financial obligations.
I suppose that would be based on whether or not sequestering is required during this case, or if I would still be allowed to work those evening jobs.
So in other words, you would have to work an evening job in addition to being able to pay attention to this, and then also take care of our probably most precious resource, which is our children. And you're going to do all of that and do that for 10 weeks. Is that what you're trying to get here?
I don't know what the workload would feel like.
Probably train for a marathon, too, in the meantime, right?
I've done that.
Yeah. Okay. Judge, I'm going to move for cause. I think that it's been way too much of this charge.
All right. I've considered your personal situation here with both employment and family obligations based on a motion of the state without objection from the defense. The court agrees that this would constitute a hardship. Thank you for returning and taking the time to fill out your questionnaire last week as well, and you can be excused with the thanks of the court. All right, juror 379. In your questionnaire, you didn't mention a hardship. Can you explain to the court how this may constitute a hardship if you had to serve as a juror?
Certainly. I originally was under the impression that my employer would be supportive of the jury. They are, but up to an extent. And there would be over 80% of the time on the jury that would actually be without pay.
Okay. Did they give you a number or term of what is covered? Is it 2 weeks or something? So you did confirm your employer covers only 2 weeks, and
then I was on a wire when I filled out the questionnaire, and that's what the time frame was. But only that on afterwards. I'm on a team of six, so leaving in that team would be a big impact to their ability to cover all the jobs and work study day in the day.
All right, Vordar from the state.
No, Your Honor, given that additional information, the state would make a motion to have juror 379 removed for cause based on the hardship expressed.
Judge, I'll stipulate.
Okay. Noting that you didn't originally feel you had that hardship, you've confirmed that now. Talking to your employer, the court will sustain the motion of the state concurring by the defense to allow juror 379 to be excused for expression of a hardship. Thank you for coming back and completing your questionnaire as well.
Thanks, Ron.
You're welcome. All right, I believe that concludes the questioning regarding the hardship on time commitment. For those remaining jurors, thank you very much for your willingness to dedicate your time chosen to serve in this case. The next matter I want to raise with these remaining jurors relates to any knowledge you may have of this case. As I mentioned earlier this morning, please don't state any facts. We'll talk to you separately outside of the presence of other jurors about what you may know. If you do know something about the case, and in addition to what you've been instructed here and last week, and not just, for example, the name of the case or something, but any information or facts that you've obtained through media coverage of the case, if you do know, please raise your red card now, and we'll figure out who we'll be talking to about that later. Okay, thank you. I'll next ask you about your subject matter of the case. As I mentioned in reading the charges, this case involves allegations of murder, conspiracy, and insurance fraud. And would the subject matter of the case make it impossible or difficult for you to fairly and objectively evaluate the evidence in this case? All right, no one answered yes to that. Next, I'm going to ask you several questions that will seem like they're very obvious, but I'm required to ask those pursuant to Idaho law to make sure there's no connection you would have with any of the parties here or the defendant. Are any of you related by blood or marriage to the defendant, or do you know him from any business or social relationship? All right, no one said yes. Do any of you have any kind of legal relationship with any of the attorneys here, including a relationship such as guardian and ward, master and servant, employer and employee, creditor and debtor, landlord and tenant, boarder or lodger? No one answered that. Are any of you a party in any civil action or lawsuit against the defendant, Mr. Daybell? No one answered that. Have any of you ever brought a criminal complaint against Mr. Daybell or been accused of a crime by any of the prosecutors that are here today? No one answered that. Do any of you have now, or have you in the past ever had an attorney-client relationship with any of the attorneys here or with Mr. Pryor or his law firm? No one responded to that. Have any of you ever formed or expressed an unqualified opinion that the defendant is guilty or not guilty of the offenses charged? No one answered that. Do any of you have any bias or prejudice either for or against the defendant, Mr. Daybell? No one answered that question. Are any of you unwilling to follow the court's instructions to you as jurors as to the law you must apply in determining this case? No one answered that. Do any of you have a religious or moral position that would make it impossible for you to sit in judgment of another and render a verdict in this case? Nobody answered that. Are there any of you that, if you are a juror in this case, would be unwilling or unable to render a fair and impartial verdict based upon the evidence presented in this courtroom and the law instructed by the court? No one answered that. I have one final question then in my voir dire. Do any of you have any other reason why you cannot give this case your undivided attention and render a fair and impartial verdict? Nobody responded to that question. With that, the court then passes its voir dire to the state. After that, the defense may inquire as well.
Judge, could we have a sidebar just very briefly, please?
Sure. All right. In conferring with counsel, I'm going to conduct a little bit of additional voir dire. I'll note that, first of all, this morning when the court received its juror affirmations of the jurors, those have been received and submitted. One juror that's still here did potentially have something to discuss on that, so I'll pick that up at this time. So juror number 1645, you said something on circle that maybe access social media or something regarding the case since you filled out the questionnaire. Can you explain that?
Correct. I just seen things pop up on my feed, so I haven't, I don't care to know the details unless I have looked further into it, but I would say what I've seen on headlines.
Okay.
Essentially, I haven't.
All right, and we will talk to you individually about that. But so something came up, but you didn't go off and do your own research while you were away. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Also, in your questionnaire on hardship, you did talk about possibly having a hardship with the trip coming up and work. When I asked about hardship, you didn't respond. Is that something you're still concerned about, or have you sorted out your ability to serve during this time frame?
As far as the trip goes, it was really for enjoyment. I hadn't bought my plane ticket yet, so it's not confirmed. And I do work with a vulnerable population, but
I reflected and ultimately, like, it would be okay without me. So.
Okay. I appreciate your willingness to continue. One other juror I just wanted to discuss, also potentially travel plans, juror number 1658. And those are coming right up, like tomorrow, if this is still accurate. Is that still something?
Yeah.
Okay. Can you explain this trip and whether or not that's going to be a hardship if you are required to miss that?
I mean, I have already bought the flights, but it is his girlfriend's wedding in Texas.
And you did pay for the flights? Let me ask the state if they've got any additional voir dire for this jury on hardship.
The state does not have any additional questions, Your Honor.
Mr. Pryor?
Judge, I'm going to move for cause to exclude her.
So this morning when I was discussing the hardship, you hadn't raised your hand, but you did check on your questionnaire that it would be. Can you just, I guess, confirm how you're feeling as you sit here now about the potential of missing this?
I guess that I didn't consider it a hardship to miss out on the trip. It would be unfortunate, but I also didn't know timing as far as when I would be required to be here. It would be after the trip.
All right. Well, the defense has made a challenge for hardship. How does the state respond?
Your Honor, the state would submit.
All right. Juror 1658, I guess, are you standing by what you put in your questionnaire, which was, yes, this would be a hardship, or have you changed your mind and said that being here is not going to be a hardship if you are required to be here and miss the trip?
Well, I guess I'll stand by saying it's a hardship. It means that I'll be
traveling. And it has been paid for? The court is, and thank you very much for your willingness to serve. I'm going to grant the request of the defense on 1658 and allow for excusal for hardship. Thank you very much for returning today and filling out your questionnaire. All right, we'll next move on then to allow the state voir dire.
Ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate you being back this morning. I know this process has already been somewhat lengthy. You were all here last week and filled out questionnaires, and now we have you back here today. The judge has already touched on this, but I just want to also touch on it. The reason that we're going through this process the way that we are is because we're trying to select a jury that can ultimately be fair and impartial in this case, that can sit in a trial of this matter, hear all the evidence, give it the weight it's due, and ultimately render a verdict. Both the defendant, Chad Daybell, and the state of Idaho deserve a fair trial. And in order to have that fair trial, that's why we go through this process, to make sure that we get jurors that truly feel that they can serve that role. As we go through this, and the judges said it, but if at any point there's something that I ask you that makes you feel uncomfortable and you would like to talk about it outside of a group setting, feel free to say. That is not going to be my intention at all, but sometimes I may not know something that's part of an answer that you feel you don't want to discuss in front of everyone. If that's the case, please just let us know. That's not my intention at all. But I do want to talk to you all a little bit. So one of the first things I want to talk to you about is I'm going to say the term brutal honesty. And if I use that term, juror 1779, what comes to mind?
Being entirely honest and not spinning.
Thank you for that. And juror 1760, how about for you?
Brutally honest. In a way.
Thank you. And would you all agree that it may mean not worrying about hurting someone's feelings, not filtering the information, not holding back? So for me, I have a niece that she's actually older now, but when she was younger, I quickly learned that she could be the person for me that would give me brutal honesty. She hadn't learned the filter yet. If I wanted to know how my hair really looked or what an outfit looked like and I went to her, she did not hold back. She gave me that brutal honesty. And I don't know, I saw some smiles. Do all of you have someone in your life like that, whether a kid or a trusted adult that you feel you can go to and they're just going to tell it to you straight? I see some nods. So the reason I bring up that term today is for a couple reasons. One is, as we go through this process, I'm going to ask that of all of you. Just tell it to me how it is. Don't feel like you have to hold back. Both the state and the defendant want you to just be completely honest about your feelings on things that we talk about. The second reason is, if you're selected to be on the jury, at some point the judge will give you more jury instructions. And at some point he'll let you know that you can start to deliberate with each other. And I want to make sure that you feel that, if put in that setting, that you feel that you can just be honest and you can discuss things. Hearing that, does anyone have any concerns right now about ability to sit on this jury and just be brutally honest? I don't see anyone saying yes. Thank you for that. The judges talk to you about the charges in this case. We have multiple counts of conspiracy to commit first-degree murder, and we have multiple counts of first-degree murder. This case, this trial will include, or most likely include, evidence that may include photos of a graphic nature. We have two children that are victims in this case and a mother of five. Does anyone have concerns that if you were to see graphic photos, photos that may be unpleasant or other evidence like that, is that going to cause anyone serious concern about their ability to sit on the jury? Juror 1645, can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I wanted to clarify. I did write on my questionnaire, but in terms of
and if the court were to want you to review all the evidence so that you could give it the weight that it's due, do you feel that that would cause you some concern about your ability to do that?
It just causes me concern. I don't believe my ability wavers, but it causes me concern.
And it's totally normal to have some concern or to be worried that you may have a reaction to those type of photos. Does anything about your concerns make you think that you would have a problem viewing that evidence and giving it the weight you think it's due and in relation to any and all other evidence presented?
Yeah.
Thank you. And I appreciate that. And when I talk about brutal honesty, that's exactly what I'm talking about. I want to know what your thoughts are on these things, concerns you may have. Juror 1680, I think you have a kid, and I won't get into specific details, but having a child, does that cause you any concerns with possibly seeing photos that may depict children that may be unpleasant or graphic in nature?
No.
You feel that you could look at those and just give them the weight they're due?
Yes.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Has everyone here been on a plane before? I see everyone nodding. So you get on the plane, and at some point, someone comes over the PA, whether the pilot or the stewardess, and tells you, you know, sit back and enjoy your flight. We're going to arrive at our destination at such and such time. If instead of that announcement, the pilot came on the intercom or the PA and said, well, I think we're going to arrive at this time, and I'm going to try to land the plane, do my best. Would anyone have concerns getting on that plane? Yes. And juror 84, I think I saw you nod your head. You have concerns?
Yes.
Would you get on that plane?
I mean, the time and destination, generally I make ample time in case of delays and such when I travel. But if the pilot wasn't confident in his ability to do his job, he probably shouldn't be a pilot.
Would it make you not want to fly on that plane?
Yes.
Thank you. And juror, let's jump over to juror 229. How about you?
Like, you can't wait, dropped into Lake.
Would you be okay with the pilot saying he wasn't sure if he could land the plane?
No.
You'd want him to land that plane?
Land someday.
Thank you. The reason I talk to you about that is because in this case, and I've said it before, but we want to ensure that jurors feel that they can be fair and impartial in this case, that they're open to hearing the evidence, weighing that evidence, and rendering a verdict. And so kind of like landing the plane, we just want to ensure that any juror feels, yes, I can do this. Anyone have concerns hearing that? Thank you. So I have a little boy, and in the mornings when he gets up, 9 times out of 10, if I ask him what he wants for breakfast, it's cheesy eggs. And there's a specific way he likes me to make them, specific ingredients. He wants his eggs, the milk, the cheese, and the salt and pepper. Sometimes I might add extra cheese. Sometimes I might modify it a little bit. But for the most part, that's how he likes his eggs. Does anyone else have any experience with something like that? And you're 1635, I see you nodding your head. What's your experience?
I have a 3-year-old daughter, and she wants her food, toys.
And do you oftentimes follow what she wants? Do you sometimes modify it?
Maybe sometimes.
And you're 126. I saw you nod your head as well.
My dad's cheesy eggs are the best, so I understand where your son's coming from.
And is there a special way he makes them?
He puts cheese in there, and a certain way he scrambles them with perfect textures, peppers, everything.
And when he makes you cheesy eggs, is that how you like him to make them?
Yes, I like eggs any other way, really.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And the reason I bring that up is because similar to a recipe, at some point, the judge is going to give you jury instructions. And sometimes in our everyday life, we may take a recipe and we may modify it. We may make it better. We may take something out that we don't like. But when the judge gives you the instructions, you're not going to be able to modify those. Even if you look at them and think, why does the state have to prove this element, or why don't they have to prove this element? That's not going to be up to you to decide. Does anyone have any concerns with their ability to take the instructions as given by the court and simply follow those as they're written? Doesn't look like anyone has concerns with that. And some of the instructions the judge will give you are going to deal with the elements of certain offenses. So kind of like a recipe, the certain ingredients that you have to use, they're going to have certain elements the state has to prove. And when it comes to homicide, an element is going to be that the defendant engaged in conduct which caused the death of a person. So basically, an element that they did it or that they were involved in it. But one of the elements is not going to be that the state actually has to prove the cause of death. So an element's not going to be the cause. So we have to prove they did it, but not necessarily how. Knowing that that might not be an element, does anyone have concerns about their ability to follow the court's instruction as given?
I have a question.
Yes.
And is it possible to prove that somebody did something without knowing the details of how?
And for the record, that was juror 1645. And I do that just so we have a court reporter taking down the numbers. The court would give you specific instructions, and in them, he'll tell you exactly what the state has to prove. So do you think that if the court gave you those instructions and said, here are the elements, would you be wanting the state to prove something else?
Right. No, I can follow them.
You'd be able to follow the instructions. Even if, and I didn't want to get too much into the instructions because the court's going to give you those. That's why I'm not trying to completely sidestep. I just don't want to get too far into that. But do you think if the court gave you that recipe, those instructions with the specific elements, and you felt that the state had met their burden, because the burden will be on the state to meet that. If you felt the state met their burden of those specific elements, would you be able to follow that instruction? Thank you. Does anyone here follow the NFL? I see one hand. So juror 1635. You don't have to weigh in on how you felt about it, but Kansas City Chiefs won the Super Bowl this year. In your opinion, should everyone on that team get a ring?
Yeah.
So when the team wins the Super Bowl, they all get a ring. Even the second string that maybe didn't play.
Yeah.
Coaches. And do you think that's fair for everyone to get the ring?
So.
I appreciate that. And juror 1779, do you think everyone on the team should get a ring?
Yeah. I don't follow football very closely, but yeah, they're all a part of the team should get.
Because they were all part of it.
That'll help.
Thank you. I bring that up because the judge has already touched on a jury instruction, or he's already given you a jury instruction today that touches on conspiracy. And he talked to you about a conspiracy being an agreement by two or more persons to commit a crime. He also talked about that you would not be to consider Lori Vallow or Alex Cox's guilt or innocence, or what may or may not have gone on in any cases they may or may not have. However, you will hear evidence of actions that are alleged to have been taken by Lori Vallow, Daybell, and by Alex Cox. So you're going to hear about that in the trial. And remember, a conspiracy, the judge has already started to instruct you on that, an agreement between two or more persons to commit a crime. An additional element will be that one of those persons, and just one, has to take an overt act, or they have to do something that would further that conspiracy, so something to move forward towards that crime. Do any of you have concerns if, given that jury instruction, that there's the agreement, they intend to do it, and only one has to commit an act? If you have person A, B, and C, and only person C doesn't act, are you okay still holding person A and B accountable pursuant to the instruction given? Anyone have concerns with that? Thank you. So today, when you were headed into court, if the sky had started to turn gray, and then you came into the courtroom and we shut all the windows, you couldn't see anything, we pulled blinds down, and you go outside and there's rain all over your car and the grass is wet and the pavement's wet, and you start driving home, the roads are wet, and you see a rainbow, would you be able to determine what had happened while you were here in the courtroom? And juror 1736, I see you nodding your head. What would you determine had happened?
Let it rain.
And juror 229, how about you? Would you be able to determine?
Yes, let it rain.
And you'd be able to make that determination without ever seeing it actually rain. So in this trial, you may hear different types of evidence, and you may hear the term, or you may be familiar with the term, circumstantial evidence. Can you all commit that you would listen to any evidence as permitted by the court, give it the weight it's due, and weigh it in relation to all other evidence? Knowing the charges, and I saw a lot of nods there, knowing the charges include homicide, has anyone come in today with a preconceived notion of a specific type of evidence that you think the state would have to show you? Are you all open to hearing the evidence as presented? Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.